Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, hello. Hi, guys. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Welcome to our little world of healing. It's a good place to be. Come hang out with us. So I have a really great interview today. I have a really great – all the people I have met since I have walked this earth with this work have been the best people. And you know, I know there's like, we're all great people, but when you embark upon something that's a totally new venture and you don't know where it's going to go, you know, when I started this podcast a couple of years ago, I started meeting people. I started meeting success stories and real-time heals and different colleagues of this work. And one is just as awesome as the next. It's just really, really fun for me. So today I'm interviewing Hannah Matluck. You guys might know Hannah's name. She has a podcast called The V-Hive. It used to be called the Women's Pelvic Pain Podcast. And Hannah and I have such a cool story because she did not know anything about mind-body work at all. In fact, I don't remember if we go into this in the interview, but I don't even know how she first found out about my work. But maybe we say it. I don't know. I recorded this a couple of weeks ago, so it's going to be a surprise for both of us. All I know is that she was interested in interviewing me for her podcast. And I came into New York City. I happened to be going through the city. At the time, she was only doing them in person, ha, 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 before COVID. And we all realized we can do anything virtually, but we didn't know that yet. But in any case, the first time I met her, she did not even know about this work. And through the interview that we did, it changed her whole life. It changed her whole message. And since then, she's interviewed on her podcast pretty much everyone in my world. So it's just been great. It's been great. And I'm thrilled to finally have her on my podcast. So I'm really excited to share that interview with you today. Hannah has come through so much. Her pelvic pain is essentially gone. She had a couple lingering things that she wanted to talk about. So toward the end, there's a little real-time Healy vibe where we talk about some of her questions. But she's a wonderful, wonderful person and sure to do great things in life. And I'm just so thrilled to support her and have her work here. So that is today. Also, today marks, well, the day I'm recording this, which is a few days before it will air, marks 2 months before the day that we will walk into Omega and all be together. Those of you who are considering coming to Rhinebeck, New York, to the Omega Institute, just incredibly, incredibly excited about it. If you don't know about Omega, please go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and click on the Retreats tab. You'll see all of my instructors, including Ruthie Lindsay, who's going to join us. She wasn't sure if she could when we were going to do it in 2020, but now, 2021, she's coming back. So Ruthie Lindsay and Lisa Schlossberg and Caroline Dewey and Erin Chavone and Athena Allred, most of whom have been interviewed on this podcast as well, an incredible dream team of women who are going to, with me, lead a week, 5 days of incredible healing. You will not be the same person when you leave there as when you walk in. I'm not saying this to be braggy, but maybe it is. I don't know how we define braggy. This work is so powerful. It will change your life. 1 week at Omega will change your life. And the only reason I'm saying that so confidently is every single person who's ever come to my retreats and given me any feedback has told me that. So I want that for you. Come with us in person in the most idyllic, beautiful summer camp for adults with incredible farm-to-table organic food and just amazing. So join us. If you want to come, click on the Retreats tab of my website. I'll be talking about Omega a lot between now and August because it's really the only in-person thing I'm doing this whole summer. And so I really want to give people the opportunity to understand how impactful I think it's going to be and how important I think it is that you come if you can. Because people are writing me constantly asking me for help, on their knees begging me for help. And guys, I just can't do private practice anymore because I don't have the time. But this is the way. If you want to work directly with me, incredibly, right there with me in the room all the time for 5 days, come to this. Come to this if you can. If you can make it to New York. And it isn't New York City, by the way. It's upstate New York, so it's not scary. Some people have written to me, I can't manage New York City. I love New York City. But if you can't manage New York City, you don't have to. It is basically in the most rural, beautiful, rolling hills, cabins in the woods kind of situation. It's really awesome. So join us if you can. If you are new to my work, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the resources tab, tons of free stuff. And if you are willing, if you are liking this podcast, if it's helping you, if it's changing you, if it's opening you, if it's expanding you, please go to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps other people find the podcast and it really makes me happy. So if you even care about making me happy, please go and rate and review it. Thank you so much. All right. That's enough out of me. Enjoy this interview with Hannah Matluck. So many gold nuggets in here. And I send you big love. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the pod. Today, I am here with Hannah Matluck. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, Nicole. Thank you for having me. This is like very exciting for me. So I really appreciate you having me here today.
This is like a full circle because when I first met you, I was interviewed on your podcast.
I can't even, it's so crazy. And we were chatting quickly before we started and just like going over where we wanted to start. And you reminded me of so many things that I even forgot about, like how our whole relationship started, how like my experience with your work, like obviously I remember the big points, but there's a lot that also I feel like I'm excited to talk about because it's all going to come up now.
Absolutely. All right. So I'll kind of just tee it up, which is that Hannah reached out to me at the time. She had a podcast called the Women's Pelvic Pain Podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And she was not involved in my work or mind-body work of any sort. She was just dealing with some issues of her own and wanting to bring some awareness to the community of people that were suffering with any sort of pelvic health issues. And she had come across my work and asked me to come on her podcast. And that was a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I had no idea the influence my work was going to have on the trajectory of her life and her work. And so I Hannah, why don't you just kind of take it from there and tell the story?
Okay. It's so crazy because like I was just thinking like the past few days of, you know, random things that came into my head of things I wanted to talk about today. And I was tearing up thinking about it and I'm literally tearing up now because you have had, it's like crazy. I never in a million years would have thought like you have had such a huge influence on my life and my career and my health and everything. And I'm sure we'll get into more of the details, but you've really, really influenced me so much, you know, to the point so much so that I'm going back to school now to get a master's in social work and right. Essentially do what you do in some sort form. But okay. So going back to the beginning, should I start at the very beginning?
Sure. Wherever.
Okay. I'll start at the beginning just for people listening. So it kind of, the story makes sense, but I'll keep it brief. So basically okay, so a few years ago, maybe around like 4 or 5 years ago, probably around 5 years ago, I developed pelvic pain. So, you know, I was getting like chronic vaginal infections, UTIs. I had a condition called vulvodynia. You know, I'm sure people listening who are familiar with pelvic pain have heard these terms before. I know you have, obviously. You know, the term interstitial cystitis, all of these terms, whatever. So I was really struggling with this for a few years. And at the time I was in a not so great relationship, which I just didn't think was contributing to anything. You know, I had no idea. Like I always thought I was kind of aware, but I didn't really realize. I really wasn't aware now.
Yeah, you don't know till you know.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously I was like, no, this is just pain. This is just an infection. I need to go to the doctor.
of course,
the usual thing, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, so I went to I finally found a few different doctors. My grandmother, who was alive at the time, had actually dealt with similar issues. She had IC like her whole life, pretty much. And so she actually had a bunch of, like, you know, relatively, you could say, good specialists. Anyways, so went to a bunch of doctors. A year or two goes by, was doing pelvic floor PT, and I was getting a little bit better. But mind you, like, I wasn't doing any sort of talk therapy. I wasn't doing journaling. I wasn't meditating. I wasn't doing anything like that. And started getting a little bit better. I do think, and I was also thinking about this, you know, I went to pelvic floor PT, and some people it helps and some it doesn't. And that's a whole other thing. But I think, like, part of the reason I actually started feeling better from that, although it took months, was because they were my physical therapists were the only people that, like, really made me, like, feel calm, like,
feel safe.
Feel safe, right?
Yeah.
So they were the only, like, I would go twice a week for months, and they kind of were the only people I had met who understood what I was feeling and who saw this and who, like, told me I wasn't going to be this way forever and, like, kind of gave me all of the reassuring things I needed to hear. So that was, you know, now I know a huge part of it. But anyway, so I started this podcast called the Women's Pelvic Pain Podcast. And I kind of felt there, like, when I was going through this journey, there were no podcasts focusing on pelvic pain. And I was realizing how big of a problem it was. Like, I was seeing
huge,
huge, huge, you know, I was seeing friends in the waiting rooms, like, people were reaching out to me all the time. And I've always been an open book. So I was very comfortable just, like, telling people everything that was going on with my body. And people were like, I was really hearing a lot of stories, like, and I couldn't believe it because I had never heard of this before. And so I started this podcast, and every week I would have a different, like, doctor or physical therapist. It was very, I guess you could call it, like, medical.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, if I was the host, I would be able to bring a more, like, the perspective of a patient who's been through it, and it would probably I would relate well to other patients listening, or they would relate well to me, I guess.
And it's a great, great idea, actually. The idea with which you brought it, which is exactly kind of, I mean, in a very different paradigm, but exactly the way I enter this, which is, I am a chronic pain survivor. Yeah. I am a patient. So when I have these conversations, it is a unique perspective to be someone who's lived through it. So I love the energy with which you started it. I think you just, like, didn't really know yet how to heal.
100%.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, it's, and even, like, you know, I listen to your podcast, like, probably almost every week. And it is true, because, like, you talk about your own experience with chronic pain, and it is so relatable. Like, there are, even though you don't have chronic pain anymore, there are, like, in every episode that you do, like, you're relating to the experience, like, the stories relate to the experience that you had. Yeah, so I started doing this podcast. I probably, when we met, I had probably been doing it for, like, almost weekly episodes for almost a year. And I got a message on Instagram, or, like, Instagram or Facebook or an email. I got some message, and from a woman who, like, a young woman in her 20s, I think she was from Australia, and she had messaged me, like, she was in a pelvic pain, you know, I think Facebook forum or some sort of online forum. And someone wrote about your work and was like, I've been, you know, like, I think it was actually Kitty who you had on your podcast.
Yes, Kitty Purr. She's incredible.
She's incredible. So you had her on your podcast. I had her on my podcast as well. And I think she wrote in some forum online saying that she did your work and she was, you know, suicidal and she got better. Her pelvic pain went away in 28 days. And I think someone who read her message, I think this is right, but it might not be. I think someone who read her messaged me and was like, have you heard of Nicole Sachs's work? Like, I started doing it. I read about someone who did it. It saved my life. It saved her life. And it's really, like, helping me a lot. So I said, no, I never heard of her work, but let me look into her. So anyways, I look you up and I'm like, wow, this is really interesting. So I reach out to you. I think I just sent you a message on Instagram and was like, I have this podcast and I've been getting messages that you've saved people's lives with pelvic pain. Do you want to come on? And then you were like, yeah, I'll actually, like, be in New York. Like,
yeah, it was so serendipitous because at the time you were only recording in person.
in person. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, obviously this is far before COVID and you were only recording in person, and you said, you know, well, if you're ever in the city, I only record in person. And I was like, I'm going to be in the city next week.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so you came, we recorded, I remember, from my grandma's apartment, and we recorded this episode and it was great. And, but I didn't realize at the time, like, I guess how great, I mean, I remember like thinking this is absolutely fascinating, but basically a year after that, a year went by, and if I'm telling too many details, just cut me off. Okay.
No, you're good.
Okay. A year went by, and I think I said to you during the podcast, I mean, I hardly listen to my podcasts like that I've recorded, and I definitely have listened to ours a few times. But I think I said in our podcast, like, oh, this is so, and I felt it. I was like, this is amazing. I'm going to do your work. You know, I'm going to start do, I didn't do your work before we had recorded.
Right.
I think maybe I had read your book maybe, but I didn't do journal speak. And so fast forward, a year goes by, and I probably had gotten a bunch of messages about people who had listened to that episode and loved it and were like so excited that, you know, you were on my podcast and whatnot. And a year goes by, and about a year later was the beginning of COVID. I think it was around like March or April, a year ago. And I don't know like what came over me, but I was like, you know, I want to download Nicole's program. So I went on your website.
Oh, you mean the online course?
The online course, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I went on your website, I bought the online course, and a year later, I was like, I'm doing this. It took a year.
But that's actually, I will tell you, so let me just jump in here for a second.
Yeah.
Considering how medicalized you were, and this, and I always want to say this gently, because being medicalized is the only thing we've got. Okay, unless you're a kid living in my house, most people believe that if something's wrong with you, the answer is to go to the specialist that deals with the part of the body of the thing that's wrong with you. You know, you have a back pain, you go to an orthopedist. You have pelvic pain, you go to a pelvic specialist. You have headaches, you go to someone who deals with migraines. Like, people don't often understand that all of this is brain science, and all this pain, although it looks so different, is being generated from the same place, which is this nervous system fight or flight stuck in long-term chronic, you know, fear and unsafety. And so when people don't get it, I give them so much compassion, because when I met you, you wanted so badly to heal. And I want to throw in here that your grandmother's apartment that we were recording from, your grandmother had taken her own life. Right. As a result of years of suffering with this pelvic stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And so what a huge, I mean, I just had such a big heart for you, because what a huge pressure, like, to figure yourself out with this thing looming over you, this beloved member of your family being so taken by this syndrome in her life that she couldn't go on. And, and like, it's so, it was just so full of feelings and so uncomplicated. And so the fact that it took you a year from the time you were introduced to my work and downloaded the course to do it, I just think is like so normal. I want to normalize it for anyone who's resistant or like who doesn't get it till they get it, because it takes a while to break down the barriers of what we have been taught and the only best information we got. You know, the little I know about you, Hannah, I know you come from a very loving, supportive family. And so even people who come from a loving, supportive family, sometimes the way the family, only way the family knows how to support is to be like, let me get you the best specialist, right? Let
100%.
Me, right? Yeah. That's what happens. So anyway, so I just wanted to kind of throw that in there to normalize, whenever you get it, you get it. And that's what happens.
Yes. No, that it's so, that's so, such a good point and so helpful for even me to hear, because I mean, I know also you experience this now, like all the time, but for me, having like now, you know, really, really been exposed to all of your work, it's like the first thing I tell people when they reach out to me about pelvic pain. And I like want to force, it's like so hard to not like force someone to do it. But as you just reminded me, like, it took me a year. I mean, it took me years really to come around to this. So I'm like, it's, you know, and you say this all the time, but it's, you can't like force someone to do this work. It just has to be, they have to be ready, as you say. So Yeah, you're right. That was a good reminder because, like, I get so frustrated. I'm like, please just do this, please. And they're like, really? I don't get it. Whatever. But I remember actually, and you another thing that you just mentioned is that I come from a very loving and supportive and amazing family. And I remember when we were recording our podcast, asking you so many questions, pretty much like, I don't, like, I understood your work, but I was like, why? Like, I think at the time I thought your work was like, you know, you get chronic pain if you have these major life traumas. And I was confused because I was right. Like, I've never had a major life trauma. Like, I don't, and you really explained to me, and then now I obviously get it, but it's really not just about the major life traumas. In fact, that's probably the lesser of the
right.
population with chronic pain. But anyways, so, okay, let me, so I'll finish the story, but basically a year goes by and, I have you on my podcast and I still get so many people messaging me about your episode and I, you know, okay, a year later I do your program, your online course. And I think the first like 5 months of COVID, which it was interesting timing, another serendipitous situation, probably when I really needed it. I was doing journal speak and a meditation every day for the first several months of COVID. And actually my dad did journals. He was doing the program as well, which was kind of cute. And
that's so cute.
It was cute. And so what was I going to say? So wait, I lost my train. Oh, so I changed the podcast. So basically because you came on, and because I became so involved and so interested in mind body medicine, and my community became so interested in it, I essentially realized, I'm like, this podcast isn't just about pelvic pain. It's and healing isn't just about pelvic pain. It's or pelvic pain, you know, vice versa. So the conversation needs to be broadened, and I don't want to limit myself to just having doctors on talking about pelvic pain. It's just like such a small percentage of the big picture. So I essentially was like, I'm going to change the name of the podcast and broaden the horizons and allow myself to have more conversations and just make this like really conducive to what healing really is. So I changed the podcast to The V-Hive. And since then, I've had so many conversations on mind-body medicine and have had, you know, like Dr. Schubiner and Dan Buglio and all of the people that are involved in this space. And it's
and
crazy.
You've had Kitty Pert, you've had Whitney Ryderman.
Oh, and Whitney, oh my God, those are my favorite episodes. And interestingly enough, those, like, I promise you, those are the episodes that have the most listens, that I get the most messages about. Like, it's crazy. It's so crazy. So, but it makes sense, obviously. And
well, it makes sense, because what I, and this is where I really feel strongly that I am confident when I say this, even though sometimes people balk, but when you do my work and when you do mind body medicine, there's an actual cure for things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like most doctors, and I understand because it's part of the medical community to like kind of cover your ass and say, well, this may or may not work and we don't really know. I like come out there loud and proud and I'm like, no, this freaking works actually.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to be in chronic pain anymore. You'll still have sensations. You'll still have troubles in your life and you'll still have pain from time to time and you'll feel the challenges of being human and all of that. But no, you are no longer going to be a person who identifies as someone with pelvic pain. You will not. Yeah. And I think that's why the episodes are popular, because people just want hope. They want like real solutions, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And like the other thing that I also find myself saying a lot to people in the pelvic pain community is just like, you know, because a lot of people have seen so many doctors and so many physical therapists and whatnot and specialists, and some of them do help them. And I say, I'm like, I don't care how much this someone helps you, like in the medical world, like you're still going to have trauma. Like you're still going to be afraid to do certain things or, you know, eat a certain food or have sex or whatever, like caused you or you think caused you the problem. Like you need to work through your fears and your traumas and your anxieties in some way. Like a doctor is not going to be able to help you with that. And you're not going to get better fully, like emotionally, mentally until you do that. So like, yeah, it's the most important piece.
Well, also because what I often want people to understand on a very deep level is the reason that you're experiencing any chronic pain, whether it be pelvic pain or anywhere else in your body, is because your nervous system is switched onto the channel of you're not safe. Mm-hmm. And the only person that can switch it from fight or flight to rest and repair is you. The only person. And that's why this mind-body work is so profound. And that's why the changes people experience in their body are so striking. Because when your nervous system moves from fight or flight to rest and repair, the pain signals simply stop firing. It's actually way less complicated than people think. And so tell me, Hannah, you did the work, you started really dedicating yourself to it during COVID. What kind of changes have you seen in your body? Like what changed?
Okay. And yes, so that's a good question. And there's one other thing I want to quickly say about my story that's really brought it full circle with, I guess, your work and mind-body medicine, which is that a year ago, I did your online program, and I became really into it. And which happens, I feel like, as you say as well, with most people who start
get it
exactly. And I started, I got a therapist, and I started doing weekly talk therapy sessions. And I was reading all these books about it and listening to all these podcasts. And it really just became became my hobby. And I had this epiphany that I was like, this is what I want to do for my career. And I've really devoted the past few years since I've had the podcast almost all of my time to doing the podcast. And I'm just like, I decided I wanted to go back to school and be able to help women with pelvic pain and different sexual health issues do this type of work, because there are maybe there are, and I don't know about them, but to my knowledge, there are hardly any therapists who specialize in the women's sexual health space who really do mind body type of work.
Once you get your degree, honey, I'm going to be able to, I'm going to fill your practice in 10 minutes.
You. Thank you. I know. I'm like, I should have, I wish I did this. I wish I did this 4 years ago, but I think, the podcast and just meeting you and meeting all the people that I met is part of the process, and it will.
Of course.
Really, yeah. But, So I think that so many women and men really need this type of work. And so that's really what I want to do. So you have influenced me in so many ways, and I am so grateful. I just really want you to know that, which I feel like you do know, but,
thank you.
Okay.
Honey.
You're welcome. Okay. So, how has my health changed since I started doing your work? That was the question. Okay. Well, what's so interesting, and this is something else I was thinking about, is that when I started doing your work, I wasn't the vulvodynia and the really severe pelvic pain symptoms were actually gone at that point, but I still knew that I had so many fears and anxieties and so many fears around just living. I had been to so many different, in addition to doctors, but nutritionists, and I had a lot of gut health issues and been told to just eat different ways and cut out certain foods and all of those things. And I was really scared of a lot of things. And I know, again, you've heard this a million times, but scared to drink coffee, scared to have sex. And I could do all the things, but I was still scared. I didn't have pain with sex. I didn't have pain when I drank coffee. They didn't present me really any issues, but I was still terrified to do them all. And I started to realize that was causing me some serious mental distress.
Well, I'm sure it was causing you tremendous anxiety, which is just another form of chronic pain. And 100%. Also, I'm sure that, and I don't mean to be fatalistic, but had you not done this work, if you had that amount of fear, I promise you, either your pelvic symptoms would come roaring back, or maybe you'd become a person with migraines or become a person with fibromyalgia. And this is not to demean any specific diagnosis, but this is the way it happens, guys. This is, unfortunately, I've been doing this work for over 20 years. This is the way it presents, which is if you don't find a channel and a way to understand your fear and your general dread for life and all the things that could possibly kind of get you, your body has no choice but to channel it somewhere in a place that you can quote unquote control. And that's why we feel safe. Unfortunately, I call it safe in the unsafest way. When we're chronically ill, we actually feel safe. Our nervous system feels safe because there's something we can control. Here's your diagnosis. Here's your specialist. Here's your nutritionist. Here's your eating plan. Here's your pelvic exercises or whatever. Go do it. And like, you're the most miserable person on the planet doing all these things, but your nervous system is like, kicking back with like a pina colada on the beach, because this kind of false safety is preferable to the nervous system than you just like flying blind. Now, the reason that this work that I teach and that you've done is so effective is it actually also creates that same sense of purpose, in so much as you've got your plan, you're doing your journal speak. You know, if you can, if you have the means to go to a therapist, great. If not, you can still do this. You know, you're reading the books, you're listening to the podcast, and it puts you in that same place of equilibrium, that same holding space for healing, but then you actually heal, because when the repressed emotions are no longer seen as a greater predator than your physical symptoms, the physical symptoms go away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always take the chance to like talk theory, but anyway.
No, it's true. Yeah.
So you say you were scared of everything, scared of coffee, scared of food, scared of sex.
Yes. And you actually made me remember another important point, is that in addition to the pelvic pain, I was also having a lot of other physical symptoms that, again, like weren't so severe, but I was having a lot of gut issues, like chronic fatigue. I would get achy all the time. Like, I had been to a rheumatologist. I was like, do I have fibromyalgia? I had been to every single doctor to rule out like every different thing that could have, that could go on in different parts of my body. And so those are still like things that I was conscious of. So I was having all of these things, and I was, the thing that I really was having was bladder urgency and frequency. Yes. And I was like very determined to get rid of that, because I, as I said, had been, you know, I'd been to every doctor, tried every medicine, done physical therapy, done all the things, and nothing got rid of the bladder urgency and frequency. And what was so interesting is that a few months into doing your work, I was drink, and I actually remember it was around the time when I had Whitney on my podcast during COVID. I was drinking, like, there's this energy drink. It's like a zero sugar, zero calorie energy, but it's a big like carbonated energy drink. It's called Highball. I would drink, usually I have like one sip and I'm like, okay, I have to pee right away. I had the whole thing, hardly had to go to the bathroom, was drinking like coffee in the morning, was, you know, I was having no issues, and I still had like minor like bladder urgency, but like I wasn't afraid of really anything anymore. And
I want to say one thing about bladder urgency, because a lot of people write to me about this.
Yeah.
Guys, I need to say this with really full confidence. Bladder urgency is TMS. 100%. And the reason I want to say this personally, because I wasn't even thinking about bladder. I forgot you had that. And I wasn't even thinking about that prior to this interview, but I was just remarking to myself about myself that I used to – so I've had three kids, and I like had this story in my mind, which is like, oh, you've had three kids, like you have to pee a lot. And it just – and this is where the nervous system is very insidious, because if you have an idea, a story that you tell yourself about what you are, or like what is like a cause and effect in your life, oftentimes – you know, it's, and this is fine, but the brain will take it up and be like, okay, well, that is true for us. And I used to never be able to get through a night without peeing at least once or twice, and sometimes three times. And it was really affecting my sleep. And when I would wake up and like get the sense that I had to pee, I would say, well, I have to go do this because I won't be able to fall back to sleep. And of course, that interrupts your sleep, and then like whatever. And so, and what was always crazy to me is I would go pee and like not a lot would come out. It wasn't like I was like, oh my God, I had to pee so badly. Like I drank a whole bottle of water. It was just like not, it didn't match the feeling I was having in my bladder, that the urgency to go. And so after I realized that I was telling this story to myself and all the things, I just said, you know what? Maybe I don't need to tell that story. Like, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I've had three kids, but like, you know, the youngest is 13. It's been a long time. And I'm very healthy otherwise, and I don't think I have to tell that story. And as soon as I really came into alignment with that, I sleep through the night every night now. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm like a normal person who just has like to go to the bathroom. Like it's so crazy to me how powerful the mind-body system is. It is insane, and it continues to surprise and affirm me again and again and again. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. No. It's, I mean, I've had many similar experiences to that, especially, I mean, not the three babies, but, the waking up in the middle of the night, especially like this past year. And what's interesting is that I did, you know, daily journal, speak, and meditation the first, let's say, 5 months of COVID. And I started realizing how much better I felt and just like lighter and happier and freer and everything. And I kind of stopped doing it. And I got lazy and was like, oh, I'm feeling good. I don't really, you know, I wasn't making the time to do it. And that's pretty much when I was, you know, during COVID, I was staying in Long Island at my now fiance's parents' house. And we lived there for like 10 months. And I was great the first 5 months. And then around, I was just realizing when I stopped doing my journaling and meditating, I kind of like lost it and was just like very, you know, really wanted to like, was getting really upset about the whole COVID situation. And obviously my bladder stuff and all of my symptoms kind of came back a little bit. And I actually did get a real, you know, UTI and had to go on antibiotics and the whole thing. But I think like what, and as you say, you know, it's like the chronic pain is gone, but I'm still a human and like things still happen. But I think what's so valuable to me now is like, and I have a few questions for you about this, but what's so valuable to me is I have this tool and I know that even if I have, you know, more severe bladder symptoms, or if I get a UTI, or if something happens, like I have this tool that will save me. And I don't really worry as much anymore because I'm just like, whatever I need to do, I'll do. But like, I have this amazing tool that I just will have forever and is like pretty much the answer. But the one other thing I want to say is there were times where I was, when I got lazy with my journal speak, I would wake up and I think I had like reached out to you and I was like, I'm waking up in the middle of the night and, you know, I'm going to the bathroom 100 times a day and all of these things. And I think you just said to me, like, you kind of just, I needed a reminder, like, ignore it. Like, you're fine.
Right.
And it took a few months, honestly, because I was waking up a lot for a few months. But now, I mean, I don't wake up anymore in the middle of the night. And if I do, I just am like, okay, whatever. And I go right. I don't get up to go to the bathroom.
That's right. That's the key. That's the key. Because the nervous system does not know anything except the input it gets from your conscious mind. Mm-hmm. That's how we tell it. You know, obviously the nervous system is also operating on a reflex, meaning if you touch a hot stove, you're going to pull your hand back. You're not going to think about it. But when it comes to safety and perception of safety, it's all coming from the input it's getting from your conscious mind. And so if you're waking up in the night, you feel like urgency and you're like, you know what? I'm fine, dude, we're good. Like, I understand this is what happens. We have this thing we've done before. So I get why I'm getting this sensation, but it's just a sensation and I'm fine. And then you go back to sleep. That's how we teach that alongside journal speak, because you're obviously doing the work to excavate your feelings and know that your repressed emotions are no longer a predator. That in concert with that kind of attitude is how we get 100% well.
Yeah. And one other thing is, you know, so for anyone who's been to, you know, a urologist or a pelvic floor physical therapist, they'll tell you to like kind of do this thing called bladder retraining, where like you hold your pee so you don't go every 20 minutes, but you go every hour. And I really didn't like that whole way of explaining. Like, I just, that was just like, what? This is, I it didn't make sense. But I guess like it, in a kind of strange way, you know, your work and the things like that we were just speaking about right now, it's like you actually, in a more like mental and emotional way, when you know that nothing's wrong with your physical body, it's like you actually don't have to go every 20 minutes. It's just a signal and you can ignore it. Like, I can hold my bladder for 3 hours. Like, I don't actually have to go. And, you know, I've been in like long car rides where the whole time I'm like, I have to pee, I have to pee. And then I finally get to the destination 2 hours later and I forget I have to pee and I don't pee for another 2 hours.
Yes.
Like weird Same. Things like that Same. Happen to me. Right. So it's, and then those moments I'm like, oh my God, like this, like I just have to ignore this stuff. It's crazy. I don't know, you know, whatever. So I think that that's also really interesting. Like the bladder retraining phrase didn't, that just didn't sit right with me. But when you actually understand that you don't have to pee, that because you do all yeah. this work, that then it starts to make sense.
So that I want to make a distinction because the energy of that bladder retraining therapy yeah. is very different than what we're yeah. saying. And the exactly. reason it is because the bladder retraining therapy goes hand in hand with like fear. Like,
yeah.
And so much attention to the area of the problem, exactly. you know, because we're like, okay, I'm going to think about it. I can make it an hour. And you're watching the clock.
And they make you write it down how often you went. It's really bad.
Yeah. I mean, I never am here to throw stones at anyone's profession, yeah. but I have to say, like I say all the time, this is going to have to be a bottom-up solution, meaning each one of us. So it's not going to come from the top down. It's not going to come from big pharma. It's not going to come from the medical model. It's not going to come from your pelvic pain doctor. Each of us has to decide, you know what? I know this isn't mainstream thinking, but I want my life. And so I'm going to do what's right for me. And when they learn about this work and they start doing the work, they understand that all those other things that they have been told in even the best intentions were actually yes. taking them in the opposite direction.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I agree.
So Hannah, so as mm-hmm. you live today, because I know you have some questions. So before we got on, Hannah said, well, is this a real-time heal or an interview? And I said, honestly, it's an interview because you're such a success story. You really like have, you're beyond, I don't consider you a chronic anything patient.
No, me
you're
neither.
Not. Like, yeah, you're good. Yeah. And so it's not a real time heal, but the first question I have is tell me, is there like what has changed in terms of, so you've done the work, you know, you have the tool, it will never mm-hmm. fail you. Like, are you still scared when it comes to sex? Are you still scared with coffee? Like, is there anything that's like tripping you up or do you feel like those things are really kind of calm now?
They come and go. And I obviously am a million times, you know, more calm and like just in a better headspace with all of those things than I was prior to all of this. But I still, and I was thinking about this because I was listening to the podcast episode that you just released this past Friday. And you gave that this story of you were in the, I think you were in the grocery store and you had a migraine and like the way that you just like talk to yourself, like the self-talk that you're yeah. really good at doing of like, I'm not today. Like, this is just, you know, all the things that you say to yourself. And I realized when I was listening to that, I was like, I still feel like I have a lot of trouble. Sometimes I'm good at the self-talk and sometimes I'm not. And, you know, like, I think that I still catch myself getting into the cycle of fear when a symptom does come up. Like I know the tools, I do my journal speak, I meditate and I, you know, I'll listen to maybe more podcasts and I'll really remind myself of what I need to remind myself of, but I still feel like I am I'm far from mastering the self-talk of like really getting myself out of something quickly.
Okay. You want to talk about that?
Yeah.
So I think the most important thing to remember about self-talk is we need to start with the end in mind. So mm-hmm. the best way to reach any goal is to start with the end in mind, envision the best possible scenario, and then work backwards to get it. And mm-hmm. so for me, the best case scenario where we're going to is that your nervous system feels totally chill. We are just flowing with the beautiful ocean breeze. The nervous system is on zero alert. You know, the difference when you watch like a herd of animals that is like frolicking in the field and there's no predator, there's no sense of a predator, there's no whisper of the scent of a predator. They're just like chilling like a villain. Okay. And then of course, when the lion is introduced, the whole herd goes into a fight or flight. It's so amazing to watch animals. I actually find mm-hmm. it very informative. and educational to watch animals, because animals show us what we need to know about our own brains. Because mm-hmm. the moment the predator is introduced, everyone's ears go up, they start communicating with each other, everyone's tense, their whole bodies get tight, they get very like standing up very straight. And so we want the opposite of that. So how do we get there? So we know what we want. We know we want this chill nervous system where there's no red alert, there's no even yellow alert. Like, we're just relaxed. So when you think about self-talk, how would you speak to a scared and triggered 5-year-old? And that is where I think it is a combination of kindness and apathy. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because a 5-year-old is looking to you to say, am I in danger or am I not in danger? Okay, so picture this, and I remember this a lot when my kids were little. Your kid is running and running, they fall and they just face planted on the ground. Okay, and immediately before they start to cry, if they're near you, they look up and they look at you. They look at you to say, am I hurt or not? And then 2 seconds later, whatever pain actually was incurred by falling on their face, they start to feel that pain. So oftentimes, even if they meet your gaze and you're not alarmed, they start to cry. They're scared, they're startled, and they might be feeling pain. So what do you do next? What I think is good parenting is you approach your child, not with crazy urgency, not screaming and running over to them, but you approach your child, you gather them up, you look them in the eye, you know, you hold them and cuddle them. And I know, oh, it's okay. You're fine. I mean, and I don't mean to neglect their feelings and be like, you're fine, be quiet. I mean, like, look at their body, you know, make sure, see that they just like got a little dusty, they're not bleeding, and kind of dust off the places in them and say, oh, look at you. I'm not, mm-hmm. basically the energy you want to give that child is, I'm not worried about this. I love you and I'm here for you, but I'm not worried about this. That's the energy we want to give to our nervous systems. So In the episode last week, when I was talking about walking around the grocery store, you know, with this blaring crazy like migraine where I basically was half blind and trying not to walk into the chip aisle, like on the knock things over. I was just saying, hey guys, listen, we don't need to do this anymore. This is like so not helping us. It's not necessary. I get what's going on. The jig is up. Like, I know that you're trying to divert me from whatever stress and feelings are going on in my life. I can feel them and I love you and I know you're coming from a good place, but you know what? We're good. Like, I am not interested. And that mm-hmm. kind of mixture of empathy and apathy, actually, that's like a good little like brother and sister, the empathy and the apathy. Is really, really the way. So what I would like you to do is anytime you're experiencing a time where you need to have some self-talk, start with the end in mind, which is you don't really want to waste your time, Hannah, at this point in your recovery with anything that's not going to bring you to the solution. So if mm-hmm. you find yourself sort of perseverating or like going into fear or going into dread or pre-grieving, like what this might mean, press your pause button. You know, I always say put your 80s tape recorder on your holster and just press that pause button and feel how it stays down. Give yourself a minute. Take some deep breaths. You know, deep breath in, longer exhale. So we're bringing ourselves from sympathetic to parasympathetic functioning in the nervous system and say, what kind of self-talk right now gets me to the solution? And I think mm-hmm. you're going to find your way pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree. That's really helpful. And that actually is the perfect segue into the next kind of question I have. And this is a question that I've gotten a lot of these questions from people who like ask from people asking me this question about your, like what you would say about this. And I'm like, oh, I actually have the same question. And so, okay. So I'll ask the question. but basically, and I think this is really important though, because I think the more I think about it, I really feel that this is one of the biggest things, because I do still have mild bladder symptoms. They don't affect my life in really any way at all, but like they're just like a lingering sensation in the background. And I think this is one of the biggest things preventing me from really, really getting rid of these symptoms is that, and also I just want to say, like, forgive me if I sound ignorant when I explain my question, but I think there's a little like the difference that I've not the difference, but like with people who have had chronic, let's say UTIs or yeast infections or bacterial vaginosis or whatever kind of pelvic infection they've had, whenever you get the symptom, there's like the trauma response of like, well, is it an infection? Do I need to go get a urine culture? Do I need to go to the gynecologist and see if I'm itchy, if it's a yeast infection, and have to take a medication for that? And not to say that like with other forms of chronic pain, you know, whether it's migraine or back pain, there, it's not that one is worse, but I think that the infection component,
yeah,
is like something that kind of is really hard for me to, and I've, as I've said, I've heard from so many other people, to like get rid of. So it's like, I can't, to get rid of the worry of,
yeah,
if I have, you know, or if I have sex and I wake up the next morning with a little more urgency than normal, oh no, oh no, oh no, do I have a UTI? Or if one day I feel like an itch down there, like, and I know it's probably not a yeast infection or any infection, I think subconsciously there's still the worry of, but could it be? Do I need to get this ruled out? Do I need? And so I think that's one of like the hardest things. Like, I know I'm not walking around every day with a UTI, but when the symptoms get worse, I feel like in the back of my head, there's still the question. And I've gotten so much better at like, even, you know, doing my journal and meditation for a few days, really like calming down my nervous system and just talking myself through it and out of it. But I think it's kind of in a way, it's still like lingering in the background. And I think that's like the next really big thing for me to like move out of that space.
Yeah, it's a gray area for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's ignorant in the least. I think it's a great question. So I have two parts of the answer. The first part of the answer I will say is that if you're having a new symptom, and it is like, I'm not saying you have, if you're having recurrent things for weeks and months, that's going to be a different answer. But like, right, let's say it's 6 months from now, you've been totally great. Yes, you have sensations that rise and fall. But then like one day you wake up and you're like, man, something is different. Something is off. Like I am, then Hannah, go to the doctor. You know, go to the doctor. And the way I tell people to go to the doctor is the same way I tell people to get a therapeutic massage or to take their antidepressant or to do whatever it is they're doing for themselves that's medical, which is take it like a vitamin. Like it's just say, I'm doing this out of love for myself. I'm not putting a ton of meaning on it. I'm not putting any fear into it, which is like, oh my God, this better help me. This better be it. Like no energy like that. Like I remember when I was in the midst of the worst of my chronic pain after I had the relapse when Oliver was little and I was carrying him down the stairs in that walker. When I had that worst year, the year that led me to actually go meet Dr. Sarno in the city in person and start this whole journey in earnest, I remember I would schedule at PT 3 times a week. I was on steroids. I was on muscle relaxers. I was on opioids. And I would go to these therapeutic massages. I would actually have someone come to my house. And the day of the massage, I was in worst pain. It was like the flare of flares just from after having the massage. And now looking back, I know why. Because I wasn't having the massage fueled by love. I was having the massage fueled by fear, which was like, oh my God, like tensing up, like this person needs to help me. I can't do this for one more day. I can't live like this. And when that's your attitude, you can't, you're never going to get better. The nervous system will override any possibility of you getting better in that kind of a fear-based situation. So if you're feeling something that's like markedly different, I mean, I haven't had a yeast infection in years and years and years, but I know what they feel like. I remember them well. And if I like, you know, got those symptoms, I wouldn't live with it for more than a day. I would go to a doctor and, you know, have the test done and make sure I didn't need to have a medication. Mm-hmm. And so anything you do, and this is another thing about this work that's actually taking this to a deeper level. Yes, it is about pain and symptoms and conditions and diagnoses, but that's the biggest, littlest part. It's the biggest part because it draws us into the work, but then it becomes about like expanding our consciousness and knowing ourselves in an intimate way that we never did before and making our lives bigger and fuller and more expansive. And that's so huge. That's so huge. Yeah. Like you guys have no idea how much bigger than your pain that is. And so one of the goals of my work that I hope to carry is to really tune your intuition. Because as you start to know yourself, you start to be able to invite a very powerful, profound connection and relationship with your own inner voice, your own deep knowing, your own intuition. And as you do that, and that's, by the way, I'm sure someone's thinking to themselves, well, how do I do that? That mm-hmm. is a natural consequence of doing this work consistently. What starts to happen is you can start to trust yourself. So if you start having a sensation that you just know in your deep knowing, you're like, this is different. No, this is something. I have to get this checked out. Get it checked out. One of two things will happen. Either you will indeed have an infection, so you'll take the medicine for the infection like a vitamin. You'll just take it and give it no meaning. You know, that same empathy and apathy. I'm kind to myself. I love myself, but whatever. I'm taking it. So it's done. What's done is done, right? Mm-hmm. So it's either that, or you'll find out that you don't have an infection and you'll say, okay, great. This is TMS. Yeah. I know what to do. That's what happened to me. Yeah. Oh, is that what happened?
A few months ago, I was like, I'm going to get this checked out. And then they're like, you're good. I'm like, okay, I'm good.
And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like either outcome is actually fine. As long as you realize that the greatest disservice you do for yourself is to do anything fueled by fear, because the nervous system has no concept of what is a real predator and what is a predator of your perception.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That's really helpful. Thank you, Nicole. Okay, I have one more question. Do we have time?
Sure.
Okay. My last question, and I think I'm really interested to hear what your answer to this is going to be. I know it's going to be helpful, but basically I this weird thing now has happened to me where I'm almost afraid to not do my journal speak. And it's like, I mean, I definitely have gotten lazy with it. Like, I still do it. I would say I do it a few days a week, but I don't do it every day. And two things. One, I almost feel a sense of guilt when I don't do it, because I'm like, this is the most important thing I'm probably doing in my entire day. And I waste so much time, like, you know, whatever, whether it's on Instagram or just like online doing God knows what. Like, I'm just like, why am I not making the time to do this every day? So I feel this sense of guilt sometimes when I don't do it. And then when I don't do it, I also feel almost a sense of fear. Like if, for example, this is a small example, but the building that I live in New York City there's been terrible construction on the building for over a year. And it's like very disruptive. And we've had to like kind of like leave and just stay at like our parents' house or whatever. And it's very disruptive. And, it's been really stressing me out, and I get like this anxiety and this fear that like, oh no, am I, you know, if I'm more stressed out right now, maybe will I get like, I'm more stressed out, if I have sex, will I get a UTI? I'm not doing my journal speak. I'm like kind of slacking off with my routine and my self-care and the things that are important. And I think I get into like that cycle because I know how helpful these tools have been for me, that I almost become fearful of like what's going to happen to my body if I don't do it. Does that make sense?
It's a great question, and it's a really common question. So I'm going to kind of, you know, refer back to what I just said, which is the nervous system is constantly looking for your input. So the first thing I would say is, who gives a shit about all of it?
Yeah.
Really? And I say that in absolute parallel with, it's all so important. Mm-hmm. And can you hear that? Like, who gives a shit about it? And yes, you got to do it. And no, you don't really have to do it. And yes, you do it when you need it. And don't worry about it, but do it. Like, it's, oh God, I know that what I say is going to land with everybody how it lands. But the truth of the matter is, you don't have to do anything, and you got to do everything. And that is the way life is. And you should never stress about any of it. The worst thing you should do is put pressure on yourself. Guilt is a totally wasted emotion. Guilt is a waste of fucking time. Anytime anyone says, I feel guilty, I'm like, just select and delete that. You know, there is just no – guilt is – it doesn't get you anywhere. It just puts you in the cesspool of your own worst thinking. And so – what I would say for you is, you are well. Yeah. You're finished. You're done. You're well now, Hannah. And because where you live is where I live. which is we're human beings. We have lives that will ebb and flow with stress and distress. And that's fine because that's called being a human being. And so, yeah, there'll be times that you have sensations that come to your body. There are times that you will feel totally free. There are times that you will be really in the midst of it. And when you're in the midst of it, honey, you got to do the work.
Yeah.
But when you stress and make it like sort of like panicked healing, that is not helpful for you. And so I'll tell you the way I live my life. I have, you know, all this lifey stuff going on, a lot of it actually right now. And the way I handle it is I certainly don't do journal speak every day. This is not a life sentence, by the way. Everyone listening should know this. Like, this is not like, oh my God, panicked, journal so you don't get sick. Like, sometimes I go weeks without journaling. It's because I'm fine. But I will tell you, when my symptoms ramp up, you know, lately I always have like a card catalog of different symptoms that are my go-tos at the moment. Mm-hmm. And they're sensations, just like sometimes you feel things in your heart and sometimes you feel things in your body. So I would never check into a hospital because I'm in a bad mood, and nor would I if I'm getting, you know, symptoms of burning mouth or symptoms of hip pain or a headache. I just notice it the way I would notice a mood and be like, all right, what needs to be done? And when I feel like I'm – and also we all know what it feels like to have your nervous system ramped up. Like if my anxiety – there's some days where I just get physical anxiety. I literally feel like someone's standing behind me with a gun. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know why. Doesn't make sense. No one's there. I've looked. No one's there. And so, you know, when I have those feelings, I say, listen, I know the solution here. And sometimes my resistance will rise and it'll say, oh, no. Instagram scrolling is much more important. And I have to press my pause and turn to face my resistance, look it in the eye and say, I know why you're talking to me like that, because the nervous system perceives my repressed emotions as a greater predator than my physical symptoms right now. And you would rather me not look at them. I get you. I hear you. I love you. We're going to do this now. That's the way we talk to resistance. And so there are times where like I will then be on my journal speak train for days and days and days at a time. I always meditate. That's just part of my life. That's a non-negotiable. But the journal speak is when it's necessary. And like you said earlier, it's a tool in your toolkit that will never fail you. So if you're, you know, if you know that things are ramped up, you do it with kindness and love for yourself. You can talk to the resistance, but it's never, oh my God, I better do this or I'm a bad girl, or I better do this or I'm unappreciative of this gift in my life, or I better do this, or what an asshole I am because I know the solution and I still won't do it. All those old voices are old voices, and they're about, you know, your self-worth and your upbringing. And this is not about having a bad upbringing. It's about being a kid, just like stuff happens that affects us and we have an image of ourselves that sometimes goes hand in hand with shame, always goes hand in hand with shame in some way. There's no shame in this. Same advice as last time, start with the end in mind. Every bit of your thinking should be fueled in the direction of how can I get my nervous system to feel the best way a five-year-old can feel when they've fallen and hurt themselves. Full of love, but full of you're fine. There's nothing to see here.
Oh my God. You're so helpful. I can talk with you for hours. For everyone listening, I've like so many times I was begging Nicole. I'm like, would you please just be my therapist? You're like, I
get
you.
That
I'm
a
like,
lot.
No.
You know what's interesting though?
Yeah.
Hannah, you know what's interesting? I get a lot of people begging me to be their therapist.
I know,
and the ones that are hard to say no to are people like you who I actually know. Because I get, you know, people asking me online. But here's the interesting thing. And I actually got a DM from a girl who I worked with a lot back in the day, like 10 years ago when I had just a regular private practice. And she was asking me to come back and be her therapist. And I know her well. And I knew her. I mean, we were entwined. I was helping her every single week. She had some very serious issues. And now she's like this incredible kid. She's like graduated. I think she's about to go to grad school for her MSW.
Oh, my God. You're really convincing people, Nicole.
I know. We're going to have like a society of therapists, which we need,
I know,
But you know, what's really wonderful and what I see in you too is sometimes when people come and beg me and I say, listen, I love you, but I just can't. And I draw my boundary, which I need to do. Yeah. I watch them take the reins of their own life and their own healing. And yesterday, the day before yesterday was my birthday, and she reached out to me to say happy birthday. Like, yeah. Oh, thank you. She reached out to me to say happy birthday on Facebook message. And I said, how are you? I said, thank you so much. How are you? And she said, I'm so great. I did my work. I did what I needed to do, like that you taught me. And I did not, you know, and I did not need you to be the person. Like, I'm the person, which is like the mm-hmm. whole point. And I said, I'm so proud of you. And you know what she wrote back?
What?
I'm proud of me too.
Oh, it was amazing.
It made my day. And like, that's how I feel about you. Like, yes, of course we want help and support. We want someone to be our therapist. Quite frankly, if we're honest, we want someone to be our savior.
I know. Like, that's what it is.
We do. I want it too. Yeah. Come save me, please. Anyone, please. Yeah. And we all want to just be saved. We all just want to be cuddled like that eternal loving mother that is like going to help us. And I get it. But honestly, you are your best love and support and advocate and therapist. And that doesn't mean when you're in like a low spot, you shouldn't reach out and get what you need. But once you have the tools in place to the extent that you have them, Hannah, mm-hmm. you don't need me. Like, yeah. I've given you all I've got. Now it's about you and your evolving, beautiful, expansive relationship with yourself. And when I said I couldn't, you found your way. You got support from a therapist. You did the work. And like, look at you. You're amazing.
Thank you. You are too. Thank you so much. Oh my God.
All right.
I really appreciate it.
So one question I ask to every person I interview, you were looking out at a sea of people, many of whom are suffering in their darkest moment, like before they got it. What is one piece of advice you would give to people out there?
That's a good question. What would my advice be? Okay, hold on. Let me think about this for 1 second.
I always put people on the spot with this question, but like, don't overthink it. Like, what's one thing you wish someone told you, like before the light went on, like, or like, you know, when maybe the light had gone on, but you were just like doing the work and you still weren't really seeing results and it's hard, you know, like just, do you have, I mean, you don't have to, you could just say,
I don't know. I would say that you will 100% get better. I don't care because I think so many times people say, oh, maybe this, maybe that. No, you will 100% get better. So just X out the belief that you might be paralyzed with whatever condition you have forever. That's not true. So you're going to get better. And I mean, as we just spoke about, I think that you have the answers within you. Like, the sooner you stop looking to other people for answers, the faster you'll get better. So you can awesome. Make the timeline for your healing, you know, like you can go to as many, you can look for all the answers, but it's really going to have to come from you at some point.
That is like awesome advice. No, it is because it's true. Because
that was my, you know, it was all of our situations. It's like, as soon as we stop looking for the answers is when we finally realized, oh, wow, like I know what's going on.
I know. I like to say it's the Dorothy with the red, the ruby slippers when she's like, you always had the power, you know, it was in you. And it's the same for everyone out there. All right. Well, listen, Hannah, I love you dearly.
I love you dearly.
And I am so proud of you. And I think you're awesome. And I love that you're going to get your MSW. And I cannot wait till you have yourself set up I can just send the world in your direction.
I can't wait. I'm so grateful to just have you in my life. And you're such a role model to me. And I've learned so much from you, and it's the most important message. So I'm excited to be able to carry it on and help people because it's so needed, as we all know.
Absolutely. All right, guys, you're so welcome, Hannah, and everybody out there. I'm sure you have gotten a lot of gold nuggets. This was a really good conversation. And remember, if you are enjoying the podcast, please go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps other people find the podcast. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.